made me feel guilty now. I was all excited about running through Hunter Biden's life currently, and Joe made me feel guilty.
Oh, what? No, I didn't mean to.
Hunter, you're a loser.
Let's run through it.
Dang it, Joe.
It's a dumpster fire out back of an S show. Who wouldn't want to run through it?
So maybe we'll get to the latest on that. I don't think it reflects on the old man. I don't. I really, really honestly don't. I might have before I became a parent. I don't now. Because guess what? Kids get to be their own human beings. Just like, well, if you go, the stupid things you've done in your life, how much do you blame your parents for?
A lot. some do. Well, I know, sure don't.
Well, some of you have had crappy parents, and it's legitimate. But I did not. And anything, any of the stupid stuff I've done in my life was completely on me.
I don't know.
100%.
Particularly in the subcategory of sinful, outrageous, ill-advised, you know, that sort of, maybe you want to blame them for, your anxiety or whatever, but your decision to blank with a blank and then blank until 3 a.m., that was not on your parents.
I don't know. There was a single day where my mom forgot to pack my lunch properly, and so Every now and then I pull off a bank heist.
Right, exactly.
With your hooker girlfriend.
So more on Hunter Biden later this hour.
Yeah, so listen, I don't know. You're busy. You got your own problems. Why am I working out my own personal demons? I find it so frustrating to be part of the national conversation for a living right now, because the national conversation has gotten so, what's the right, unproductive, I guess would be a good word. It's like, you know, walking into a room and hearing people screaming epithets at each other and trying to make sense of it. The only sane response really is to turn around and walk out of the room, because you're not going to do any good. People are already beyond that. And it's, you know, it's the product of a couple of things. Both of us, Jack and I, we take in a lot of different media, left, right, and center. Partly just because we both find it interesting and partly for a living.
I think you have to. I have to. The media that tends to agree with me, I can't get the whole story from them.
Right.
Most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Ian Bremmer says that the pinned at the top of his Twitter page is, if you're not following someone you don't like, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And that is
or
absolutely
disagree
true.
With or whatever it is, yeah.
I watch cable news shows that I hate almost every human being on the set. I mean, I don't just disagree with them, I hate them.
Yeah.
But I often get information that I don't hear other places.
Well, and listen,
I've got to verify it, obviously.
Right.
But an opinion or just a way to look at things.
Well, you know, I'm a big football fan. I can't wait for the Super Bowl. To me, it's like watching game film of your opposition. It makes your team better, and you might understand, oh my gosh, we're not doing that very well. Here's a flaw in our argument or a weak point in the argument, which we either need to change or argue better or what have you. So I think it's useful. But, you know, it's become increasingly clear that very few people have the time or inclination to do that. We used to think that we have these neutral, reliable news sources, and we all take them in and have a fair amount of overlap. Maybe you're right, maybe you're left, but there's a lot of overlap in what you're hearing and seeing. Now, and I realize it's kind of a tired point, you've heard it before, but now there's so little overlap that, I mean, and we get emails. We got this nice email, Brian, who, from life circumstances, hadn't listened to the show for a while and is back and now is outraged that we're not on the toss Trump out train, and thinks the fact that we're taking impeachment lightly is just indefensible and insane and the rest of it. And then here's a little tip for you.
I take most things lightly.
Here's a little tip for you. Not just in writing an email to our show, but in dealing with human beings. Then Brian decides in his last paragraph to explain to us why he thinks we're so off base, and it has to do with our motives. And I think it's just because you think you have to, and your corporate overlords are telling you. Here's a little hint. Whether you're talking to your wife or your buddy or your coworker or your boss, you start telling people you're just saying that because it's over. Final buzzer. The game is over. There will be no productive discussion from that moment on. When it comes to human interaction, that is stabbing them in their liver. It ends the discussion. Brian, you'd have been a lot better off without your last paragraph. By the way, for the record, because we get this a lot, Our corporate overlords don't give half a crap what we say. They just want us to get an audience. Never have, never will. To whatever extent we have corporate overlords. If we do, I don't know their names, and I wouldn't know them if they walked in the room. Hey, we need you to be more pro-Trump. Who the F are you, and get out, would be our response. I'm the senior vice president. Oh, good to meet you.
That is the secret of modern media, definitely. If you were a conservative-leaning show on MSNBC, we got ratings, they'd be fine with it. And the reverse on Fox. They just want ratings to sell commercials.
Right.
That's what they want more than anything else.
Right, but I just want to make this point to you. Those of you particularly who are outraged that we are not taking the impeachment thing seriously. And I've used this, it's not even a metaphor, it's an example before. Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler, trust me when I say this, are way over the top. They're really out there. They're a little in love with themselves, and they say stuff that is just indefensible in prosecuting a political case. On the other side, you got attack dogs like Devin Nunes, who's out of the House, Daryl Issa, who's trying to get back into it, running for, I think it's a different seat in the San Diego area, but, and there are attack dogs on the Republican side that they're there to lay the wood. They're not there for nuance. That's their job. Just so you understand, your guy Schiff and your guy Nadler, they are absolutely not there for justice. They're hatchet men. Each side has them, okay? I've served on several juries now. The prosecution presents your case, and this has happened to me. And I was sitting there, and my fellow jurors were sitting there thinking, holy crap, how quickly can we put this guy in prison? Seriously, we thought that. This guy needs to go away. And then you break for lunch or maybe overnight or whatever. Then the defense comes in and they call their witnesses. And by the time you're done, you're thinking, I can't believe this poor son of a gun even got prosecuted, much less or arrested, much less tried. This case has more holes in it than, Swiss cheese. Get acquitted. Get out of here. Having thought only hours or days before, this guy's a monster. So much of America is only hearing the prosecution case.
I see your point,
and
yeah.
I would say they're hearing it from some damned unethical prosecutors. And then they flip us on and they think, are you guys out of your minds? Trump did all these things for these reasons. We've heard it over and over again. And look at the supporting case and the rest of it. And you haven't even heard the defense case, much less the point of view that, I think he did most of what y'all are saying, but there's no way they're going to boot him out because it's just not serious enough to remove a president. It's unethical. It was dumb. It was ham-handed. Rudy's a loose cannon, the rest of it. I agree with you on a lot of that stuff, but here's what you're missing. And I'm not going to fill in all those blanks right now because we don't have time, but keep listening to the show. All you've heard is the prosecution case. And I tell you what, I think the Clinton result was the right one. A lot of my conservative friends hate that. I don't think it was worthy of removing Clinton. And he did commit crimes and he was a lying piece of crap. But I just think that's such a big move. You got to be extremely careful. It's got to be a really, really serious thing. Now, again, here come the emails. You're angry. That's fine. I can take it. I'm willing to concede virtually 75-80% of what y'all are claiming about Trump, and I don't think he should be removed. But you haven't heard anybody make that case. So, I'm not mad at you for thinking that, but that's one of the reasons you're thinking that. You're a juror who is running to the bench and saying, Your Honor, the jury is ready to render a verdict. We don't need to hear the defense. Don't be that.
We got Dan Balls of the Washington Post coming up later this hour, and we'll talk to him about where things stand with the wranglings over impeachment, and he's a pretty fair guy.
Oh, he's old school, which I love about him.
I have heard, speaking to taking in both sides of the media, on Hunter Biden testifying. You take in some media, that is a complete joke. There's somebody that's got nothing to do with this. It's absolutely a joke. It's just an attempt to beat up who they think is going to be his rival, Joe Biden, and drag the Bidens through the mud. And then you got the other side saying, Tucker Carlson said it on the show last night, Hunter Biden is the key to this whole thing. Whether or not there was corruption there and the president was investigating it, et cetera, et cetera. So,
right.
Two completely different views of just that point. But we'll talk to Dan Balls about that later. Good news on the you don't like dogs on your planes front. We'll get to that coming up. Maybe they're going to finally take a look at this whole support animal. Somebody may have pushed it too far.
Oh, boy.
Is part of the tipping point in that story.
My offer remains. If you can get a full-grown horse on your flight, I will pay you $10,000.
Our text line is 415-295.
No mini horses. Sorry, go ahead.
415-295-KFTC.
Armstrong and Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
One New York resident wants alcohol to be recognized as his legal companion. 47-year-old Floyd Hayes of Brooklyn registered a pint of beer as his emotional support animal yes. with the USA service dog registration.
I heard that.
Hayes says he wants to see if this method will allow him to carry his drink of choice on public transit. He listed beer as a helper for his social yes. anxiety disorder,
Amen.
But claims it was a lighthearted effort and he is not an alcoholic.
That is so clearly a decent argument. If Ick. That college girl gets to bring her dog with her on right. the plane because it makes her feel more comfortable, you know what makes me more feel more comfortable? This six-pack of Coors Light.
A couple of glasses of wine.
Makes me feel way more comfortable. I'm not going to freak out. I'm going to be more friendly.
Right. No fear of the airplane, you know, whatting. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I thought that was fantastic. And a pretty decent argument right there. If the point is me being more comfortable to be able to fly... Not a question.
Right. I'm less stressed. This and is now not miserable for me. It's actually more borderline pleasant.
And me having a couple of beers is way less disruptive to my passengers and everything like that than that person having a dog
right.
next to
You've
me.
You've only pooped on a plane, what, once, twice? So, oh, major political news. Marianne Williamson. Okay. Oh, you have that?
No. This was a... It doesn't matter.
Marianne Williamson has endorsed Andrew Yang.
We slam it like nobody's business.
Well, that'll move many votes.
Okay, back to the emotional support thing.
Ah, yes.
Kind of keeping with that theme, because everybody realizes what a joke this has become, U.S. Airlines are about to ban untrained support animals, which needed to happen. The U.S. Department of Transportation could allow airlines to ban untrained animals from airplanes, possibly ending the entire debate over whether emotional support pets deserve the same treatment as fully trained service animals. I'm shocked this didn't happen 5 years ago. Particularly in recent years, you may have noticed this, with a rise in emotional support animals ranging from dogs and snakes to miniature horses, pigs, ducks, peacocks, and turkeys.
But some turkey.
But some passengers worry that animal owners are skirting rules just for the convenience of flying with their pets. You think that's going on there?
Both Marshall and I live in an area with lots of turkeys, and they're not comforting at all. They look like friggin' dinosaurs, number one, and they're scary. They'll attack you in your car.
The new rule would let airlines limit service animals only to dogs, first of all, so no snakes. Or what was also on the list?
Miniature horses, turkeys.
Peacocks.
Rabbits.
Somebody actually got a peacock on a plane?
A peacock?
They brought it into the terminal. I think they actually got the Heisman stiff arm on getting that one on
yeah,
one
okay.
way. But there
yeah.
was an attempt.
In airlines, Jack, they don't want the bad pub. They don't want somebody to go crazy and sue them or claim that, you know, they're a victim of something or other, and all they wanted to do is bring their peacock on, and
so they
just don't need the pub.
I'll bet they were pressuring the Department of Transportation. You make the government rule so we don't look like here at United that we're anti-flying with your pug.
Right, right. United's about punching Asian doctors and smashing guitars, not evicting pugs.
And leaving you stranded all day in whatever terminal.
Without apology.
As it says here, there are online companies that will self-certify emotional support animals with a therapist signature for less than $100.
I can't believe they get that much. Why haven't I opened up a website to do the same thing?
Why?
I know doctors. Hey, do me a favor. Stop by my house 5 minutes a week and sign these forms.
We actually thought the last time we flew, why haven't we flown with our pug? My son with the emotional problems really feels more comfortable with the pug next to him. And
that would be legit.
Close to it. I mean, it's not a highly trained animal like they're going to narrow it down to. The problem with the obviously it's just a dog that makes you feel good,
right?
Is practically everybody. Now my dog makes me feel terrible. I get home and it's just seeing the dog. It makes my day worse.
And starts attacks wagging me on a virtual daily basis.
Starts wagging its tail and I just get so mad.
And nothing makes me madder than the look on that dog's face.
Stop with the faithfulness.
Quit with your, what do they call it, unconditional love.
Right.
I've had it with unconditional love.
Exactly.
But they're only going to allow for psychiatric service animals only after they've had the same training and treatment of psychiatric service animals and other service animals that, you know, are actual service animals. Your seeing eye dogs, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And that's actually going to happen now. It's finally over. Thank goodness. I hated it.
Yeah.
Some of those actually trained service animals are so impressive. I saw this one where it was a service animal at a park, and a squirrel comes up and just starts, like, pawing at its paw. And
oh,
this,
my.
And
wow.
The service animal is just sitting there looking at it, be like, I could smash you, but I'm on the clock right now.
Right.
I don't want to lose my job. I got kids. I got health insurance.
I got a day off Friday. I'm going to come back here. You're here. You're screwed. All right, squirrel.
Yeah, keep an eye on your nuts.
Yeah. You know what I think? Squirrels are rats with better PR. If they didn't have that fluffy tail, people would despise them. If squirrels had the long, bald rat tail, you would eradicate them as quickly as you could. Tell me I'm wrong.
They're like an annoying hot chick. If you weren't so hot, people wouldn't be buying you drinks and listening to your boring story.
They'd be telling you to shut up. You're killing the buzz. Exactly. Squirrels are annoying, the annoying hot chick of the animal world. That's brilliant.
Dan Balls of the Washington Post coming up in a little bit, and we're obviously going to talk about impeachment and why do I keep misplacing my phone? Darn it.
Yeah, and we've also had some really interesting conversations with Dan, if you haven't caught him, about the state of modern media, too, which he is remarkably frank about.
I thought it was really interesting. I'm super into this book about the impeachment of Andrew Johnson now, and because I lived through the Clinton impeachment, I'm pretty up on that. I wasn't as up on the Andrew Johnson impeachment, the other of the three. And some of the things they said before, during, and after that impeachment are exactly like what's going on today.
Wow.
I'll have to get to that later in the show. But Dan Ball's coming up in a few.
Armstrong and Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
As I mentioned, I'm reading the book about the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, so I'll be up on all my impeachments. And in the opening chapters, they talk about how at the end of the whole thing, it left such a bad taste in everybody's mouth. That everybody decided, even the people that hated Andrew Johnson, thought this was just a legal train wreck. And I think the same feeling existed after the Clinton impeachment, and I wonder if we're going to have the same feeling after this one.
Well, if I were a betting man, wait a minute, I am a betting man. I would bet that is likely to be the outcome, but let's not prejudge. Let's talk with the fabulous Dan Balls of the Washington Post, chief correspondent covering national politics, the presidency, and the Congress. Dan has won virtually every journalism award that's around, and it's always a pleasure. Dan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm sorely tempted to talk nothing about impeachment and just talk about your life and experience and career because I'm sick to death of impeachment.
Well, I think we should stick with impeachment.
Okay.
Also, that book about the Andrew Johnson impeachment, if it's the one by Brenda Wineapple, is a terrific book.
The
it's
Impeachers.
A really good book.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And the fact that so many people felt like it was
just a bad idea,
a mess. And then we had the same experience with Clinton. Do you agree that we might come out of this with three impeachments where everybody thinks that might not be the best direction to go in the future?
Well, that may well be the case, I think, for different reasons. I mean, I think what happened in the Johnson impeachment back in the 19th century and the reaction to that was different than the Clinton impeachment. And the Clinton impeachment is different than this one for a variety of reasons. So, but it's been said a lot of times. The process of impeachment is not a process that does anything but kind of tear a country apart. And it's difficult to imagine a situation in which an impeachment process ends with the country feeling better. The one exception to that is the president who was about to be impeached, Richard Nixon, who resigned before that happened, and therefore there was not a formal vote in the House, and that didn't go to a Senate trial. But that resignation gave people a sense of closure and satisfaction, and that's quite different than we've seen in the other two that we've witnessed in our lifetimes.
You know, I think we need a new national position. I'm not sure exactly how it would be elected or appointed, but a national sage who would be nonpartisan and just say things like, I want you to realize at the end of this, we're all going to hate each other. Do we want that? You know, I don't know, a national wise old uncle. I mean, Dan, would you be interested in the post?
I decline. Thank you.
Well, so let's get down to brass tacks then. To your mind, how is the prosecution's case coming along? And does it matter how well they do, really, given the senators' predispositions to do what they're going to do?
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. One is that the House managers or the Democrats, however you want to describe the prosecution, have dominated the first 2 days of this trial. In part, that's not unexpected because the House managers go first, and then the president's defense team will come after that. But the opening day, which was a very long day and got testy at the end, to the point that Chief Justice John Roberts had to admonish senators and particularly the managers and the defense team to act with a little bit more decorum. The Democrats have sort of driven the process over the first 2 days. Senator McConnell had to make some concessions to his own folks on the opening day about the rules that he had initially promulgated, and that was, I think, unexpected, because normally McConnell is very, he's very careful about the way he proceeds, and in this case, he overstepped and got kind of pushed back on by his own people. So the case that they are laying out, and I think, you know, Adam Schiff, who is the lead attorney on the House manager side, spent more of the day than anybody else in that team. They are delivering a case that is well known, that has a lot of detail. They went through the timeline yesterday. It is a compelling timeline as to the course of events, and they have a lot of detail about it. Their goal, obviously, is to try to persuade four Republican senators eventually to vote to allow documents and or witnesses. And there's no indication at this point of whether they are succeeding on that very crucial question.
Yeah, that was a kind way of you putting it. Arguments that are well known. Yes, I've heard this all before. I personally am not going to be paying a heck of a lot of attention until we get to the most exciting part, which is the, are we going to have witnesses or not? And it was your newspaper, the Washington Post, yesterday that had the story that, in closed-door meetings, are they looking at a Biden for Bolton trade? Now, that got slapped down a little by Schiff yesterday, but if that happens, that's going to be some serious drama.
Well, that would be some serious drama. Both Schumer and Schiff threw cold water on that notion yesterday.
Do you think it's over as an idea?
No, I don't think it's over as an idea. I think it will continue to kind of float out there as a possibility. I think realistically, it's probably a non-starter. I don't think that the former vice president is eager to be a trade bait in this thing. Although there are some people who think that he could do himself a favor if he were to try to call their bluff. I mean, basically say, okay, if you give up documents and witnesses, I'd be willing to testify, and then see if the Republicans would be prepared to make that deal. But that's a risk on Biden's part, obviously, and I don't think he's in a mindset at this point to want to go in that direction.
Does he have to go if they ask? If they say we want to talk to Hunter Biden or Joe Biden, do they have to show up?
If they're subpoenaed, they would presumably have to show up.
Can they take the Fifth? They're not being accused. They're not being accused of anything. So, can you take the Fifth if you're not being charged with anything?
Well, you might.
Think it, I think if Joe Biden went in there and took the fifth, that would not be helpful to
probably
his
not.
Well, how about political
very,
aspirations?
Very good point, Dan Balls.
But Dan, Dan, in the words of the POTUS, where's Hunter? It's Hunter Biden that I think is the key witness in terms of, you know, if the defense is going to try to make the case that, look, there was a legitimate concern about legitimate corruption here. And the president was not merely self-dealing. He was looking into a serious bit of corruption. And that's probably a case worth making. You've got to call Hunter. And then, you know, if I were Hunter's lawyer, I'd say, hell yeah, you're going to take the fifth. And it's going to go right back to the guy sitting in back of you, John Roberts, as to whether this is legit or not. Because you're involved in a lot of crazy stuff. And who knows, you know, what you say here, never mind here. It's in whatever district in New York or what have you. There could be a case down the road. So, yeah.
Although there's no indication that what he did was illegal. The issue is Burisma and whether there was corruption in Burisma. The question with Hunter Biden has to do with, you know, what was it smelly? And was it, you know, was it somebody who was able to get a very fat contract because he was the son of the then vice president? What Biden did is that, you know, as the has been discussed many times, was carrying out the policy of the United States government with the support of many, Republicans in Congress, with the support of international organizations and allies, to try to get rid of a prosecutor who they did not think was going after corruption. And the likelihood, if that had happened, was that Burisma would then face more of an investigation than they were facing at the time. So, the Hunter Biden thing may be embarrassing, but the question of was it illegal, I think that's a totally different question.
Well, that's
and frankly, it's not. You know, it is not material to what Trump was trying to do at that point.
Well, that's when it gets interesting as we all go back and forth between looking at this like it's an actual courtroom and trial and crime and the idea that it's politics. It's trying to damage various people for an upcoming election and, what your goal is there.
Yeah, and to me, if you could establish even serious doubt that, oh, wait, it turns out that whole Hunter Biden thing was crooked as hell. And that creates enough doubt politically, Dan, to me that, you know, since we are on a political procedure, but, you know, we'll all find out together in the next several days.
Or even if the Democrats lose, as everybody expects, that Trump will be acquitted, did they accomplish something by damaging him going into the election? Then some ways they could call it a win, I guess. But it seems to me that everybody thinks there will be witnesses. Do you agree with that?
I'm not 100% sure of that. I think a lot depends on how these opening days go and the effectiveness of the administration and the president's defense team in rebutting the case that the House managers are making yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I think there are probably a couple of senators who are very inclined to vote for witnesses. I don't know if we are at four at this point.
Final note, just a little preview. I know you know Jay Sekulow's act. He is the president's head attorney. What do you think of him? What can we expect from him?
Well, based on what we saw on the opening day when they were having a go-round about some of the rules and things, at times he was not as effective as he probably needed to be. So we will see once we get into the time when they have their own defense and prepared, a prepared defense, we will see how effective they are. I think that there were questions about the skill and the effectiveness of the president's team on opening day. We obviously haven't heard from them since, and we won't until Saturday. So I don't prejudge how Sekulow will do once he has the full moment to lay out what they want to lay out as part of the defense.
Well, the morning consult poll yesterday had it 47-45 leaning toward Trump's removal, but the key being those numbers haven't moved really in weeks and weeks and weeks. And I just wonder if they're ever going to move.
There's another poll, maybe a Pew poll, that had it like 51, 45, or 46. But
in favor of removal, as I recall, right?
In favor of removal.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, I think the larger point is that this proceeding so far, like everything else that has happened over the last 6 weeks, has not moved public opinion in any material way.
You just wonder if anything could.
Final question for the great Dan Balls of the Washington Post. Niners or Chiefs, Dan?
Oh, man. Now, where are you based?
Well, we're on in both cities.
We're all over the place.
So we're really
and
we're
doing, beloved, by the way, in both places.
We're doing the Hillary Clinton thing. I wear a Yankees hat. I wear a Red Sox hat.
You know, I have not made a choice in this. I was rooting for the Chiefs in their game. I think Patrick Mahomes is a terrific quarterback, and I enjoy him.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm a Midwesterner, although I grew up in Illinois and therefore was a Bears fan as a kid, I was rooting for the Packers, and that wasn't to be. They got skunked again. So
indeed. Well, they're all fine young men, and they're trying their best. Let's just root for no injuries.
Dan, so well put.
we need that voice in this country today, Dan, bringing us together. Dan Balls of the Washington Post. It's always great. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks, guys.
All right, you got it. We'll see. We'll watch it unfold.
I agree with his point, and he's absolutely right, and maybe we'll get into the details of it. Probably not. Andrew Johnson trial, Clinton trial, and this one. Three very different, you know, in the specifics.
The sets of facts.
The specifics and everything, different. But overall, 30,000 feet looking at it through history, it's going to be exactly the same. The president's going to stay, and most people on both sides are going to say that was a mistake. I don't think there's any way it doesn't turn out that way.
Legitimate stuff that people hate and think the stuff I hate is serious enough, we get to boot him out. But the stuff you hate is not necessarily big enough. I think, isn't that kind of the, it wasn't big enough. We shouldn't have done that.
Three times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we shall see. Again, as I said to Dan, we'll all find out together for better or worse.
Yeah.
Armstrong and Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
So I just got a text from my wife that one of my kids has got temperature and sick, so with any luck, I brought that into all of you today.
Oh, Lord.
And then you can take it home to your families.
Unclean!
So,
we talked yesterday about how the normal temperature has gone. It's no longer 98.6. We've cooled off as a species. And we got a note from a guy who made the point, look, I've always run like a degree and a half cold. And so I would have a 99.5 fever, and my mom would say, that's barely a degree. Go to school. Turns out he's actually quite ill.
I did wonder, does that make a difference for that, too? Do you have to go with what your normal temperature is and use that as the baseline for everything?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I had a doctor once tell me that. Just because I was always 98.4, which is barely off. But he said, yeah, you have a baseline temperature. You go off the baseline.
Like my son is...
Much like my power moves to the rack. The baseline. That's my territory.
Like my son today is a 99.
He's a short white guy who can't jump. Yes?
He's a 99.5, but I don't know what his baseline temperature is.
Got to have the baseline.
Yeah, I guess we all do need to have the baseline. Yes. Now that we know that it's cooled off a lot.
Yeah.
That a number of people are well below that.
It's because of the global warming. Little Greta Thunberg told me that. The world is hotter, so you need to be cooler just to balance it off. You can see.
Wait
and,
a second.
The penguins are flying and ostriches are swimming. What?
He's got a
How dare you?
Sorry.
He's got a math test today. Now, she took his temperature. He's actually hot. So I guess he's actually sick. But tummy ache day of a math test is always suspicious.
I would like to
speak up. Big math test you've been studying
for the boy. If he's sick, he's sick. And any further inquiry is merely slander. Impugning his motives. How dare you?
There's a backstory. Math has been pretty difficult for him. And serious test anxiety around math as it's grown over time. It's become if he had a stomach ache because he has a math test today, it wouldn't surprise me, whether real or imagined. But if you got a fever, you got a fever. But I told him last night before he went to bed, because we studied the math and we worked on some of the problems. We did some practice stuff last night before the test today. And I told him last night, I said, when you sit down to do your math test, I want you to say this to yourself over and over and over. My parents don't care what I get on this test. What I get on this test. Because I said, because I don't care. As long as you try, I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. I said, I know plenty of very successful people can't do math at all.
Right. Listen, you're a verbal guy. You're whatever. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was trying to convince him to do three or four problems and get them right so the teacher knows you understand the concept, and leave the rest of them blank is better than getting them all wrong because you hurried through and you felt like you had to get it done. Because it's all about the concept in real life and for the teacher. But in real life, knowing how to multiply double-digit numbers is something you should know how to do.
Right.
But you don't need to do it at a certain speed or anything like that throughout your life.
No.
You just need to know how to do it.
Right.
So for me personally, as wanting to raise someone who succeeds in the world, I just want him to know how to do it.
Right.
And I also found it interesting last night when he got the concept of these particular problems that he was really struggling with, like serious struggle, like tears and upset and everything like that. And we finally broke through and got it. Mm-hmm. I got more satisfaction out of that than I got out of my own math tests that I usually did pretty well on. It's something you don't recognize as a kid. Your parents get more enjoyment out of you succeeding than they did out of their own success.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just so interesting.
Oh, yeah.
It makes perfectly good sense because my genes are screaming out, he's going to survive! He's going to survive!
To break it down to the most biological level, yes.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Plus, you love him.
I should be back in school.
Right. Yes, you should. Finally, yes. You've wised up.
That's what I should have done. Next time he has a math test, I'm going to pull him out. We're going to go out into the park. And we're going to yell about climate change.
Exactly.
And you'll say, we're doing something important. You're adding numbers. We're trying to save the planet.
Son, we're going to take a raft.
Auckland. Where's Auckland?
Well, it's going to take a while. Yeah.
I'll give him some good lines to say. You've stolen my childhood.
How dare you with your empty words.
Can't be in school. He's trying to stop climate change.